Welcome to another Britflix.com podcast. My name's Stuart Wright, and today's guest, returning guest, I should say, is Daniel Draper. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Stuart. Good to be on again.
We've talked about two of your films, but do you want to talk about your new film? Just give people a brief synopsis, you know, tell people what it is, brief synopsis to what it's all about.
Yeah, the new film is a documentary called Manifesto. It's a feature-length documentary about Walton Constituency Labour Party, which is the safest Labour seat in the country, in a constituency that is one of the most deprived due to sort of, austerity measures for the last 10, 12 years. Hmm. It's also the only constituency in the country with two Premier League football clubs in the boundaries, which is quite unique. And it links into the other two films I've been on to talk about. We're sort of calling this film the last installment of something we're calling the Hope Trilogy, you know, a series of films sort of made and focusing on the Labour Party sort of during the Corbyn years, if you like.
Mm. Indeed, no, and that's kind of when I was watching your film this time, because it was so specific about the machinations of politics, because it's about the, you know, essentially leads up to and includes the 2019 general election. So it's very much about the sort of lead up to that and the fallout of that. And obviously we've had the pandemic and all kinds. So if I can start with there's three questions that are linked and you'll see how they fall. So the first one is, what did the documentary teach you about Liverpool?
Ooh, that's a good question. About Liverpool, do you know, this might sound really negative, really, but I think as we were making it, I realised that Liverpool's not as, like, you know, I think from the outside perspective, and this documentary probably doesn't help with that, it seems like a sort of radical, left-wing, independent sort of city. And I think we like to think that more than it actually is. I think the reality of it isn't as much, if that makes sense. I think it's the city's very anti-Tory for various reasons, but I think it almost stops there. And I think this film almost focuses on the people who are what the rest of the city would like to sort of see ourselves as, the real activists, you know, the real sort of left-wing sort of stalwarts in this film. But I think that maybe that came through. You know, we shot this for 3 years. So I've started to think that. And I've only just linked that in now, right now, with you asking me that question, like that feeling that I've thought and has been creeping upon me for the last 2 or 3 years is probably linked to making this film, because we've been on all the marches with the film. So you go on the marches and, you know, you'll see clips on Twitter, on Facebook at marches. When you're on those marches, it's the same 300 people, you know what I mean? But there's bigger ones, if it's about the environment or Black Lives Matter, then that they really galvanise people. But by and large, it's just a small committed group of people, really. And I think maybe that's what I discovered about Liverpool.
And I think what you've discovered there, though, you could almost extrapolate to the rest of the country in many senses. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who believe in, who purport to believe in something, but generally are quite apathetic about putting those beliefs forward, because it's somebody else will do it. I don't have to bother doing it. I'll just share a thing on Facebook and I've done my job.
Exactly. I think that's people sort of see that's what solidarity is or activism is these days, is retweeting something, really. And we, you know, before we come on, we were talking about sort of the pre-internet world, and that's what's interesting about the activists in this film. They live in that world. It's you know, on the streets. It's speaking to each other. It's knocking on doors. You know, it's interaction with other humans to try and affect something.
That come across really strongly. Now, following that question, then, so this. With your three films being like your Hope Trilogy, this is my trilogy of questions. So the second one is, what did the documentary teach about the Labour Party?
All right, that's a tricky one. Do you know what? It was only until recently It's only when you start, like, finish a film, release a film, that you really start to think about it. You're at a sort of, because, you know, you speak to people and you, you know, you write little pieces and you go on the radio. You start to think, what's the film about? What's the crux of the film about?
Mm.
So I'll really sort of be reflecting on the film. And I don't think this film's actually really about the Labour Party in many ways. I think it's about just activists who happen to be in the Labour Party. I think the film is almost... I sort of see it as a film about Labour, over Labour with a, you know, as a sort of work, over Labour as in the Labour Party. It's about people sort of working towards something and improving their communities. The film itself, I suppose, the Labour Party, there was hope. The Hope Trilogy is in the fact that, you know, that manifesto in 2019 galvanised so many sort of activists, including the people in our film. That's the hope in many ways. Afterwards, the fallout, the Labour Party, you know, most of the film and the people, most of the people in the film have sort of, a lot of them have left the party, or some of them have been expelled. Alan Gibbons, one of the main guys, has been expelled since. So, yeah, the Labour Party's, yeah, it's totally shifted from the one we started filming to the one that is now. The idea for the film was it would end with a general election win. We thought we'd use Walton as a microcosm for Corbyn's Labour Party, you know, politics from the cold face on the ground. And when they win, they'll, you know, that'll be the victory. And that didn't, obviously that didn't happen, quite naively, which meant we had to come up with a sort of a way to end the film, because nothing positive has happened within the Labour Party internally anyway since 2019. So we had to sort of, that's when it became weird, because the documentary, you know, you've watched it, is observational.
Mm.
And that was, you know, we decided very early on that that's what we wanted to do. Just, you know, the camp would be part of the CLP, but it was getting to the point where it was like, well, how do we end this? Just not on a depressing note, but, you know, I don't want to do it. And it's unfair to the people who put all the time in and believe in, like, socialism and hope in a better world. So that's when sort of the filmmaker's hand sort of starts creeping in, and we start to sort of try and affect a way to sort of navigate it to a positive ending, which, as you've watched it, that's where we sort of introduce Robert Tressel as a sort of character, if you like, to sort of weave the past and geography into sort of the story, and then allow us to, you know, conclude, if you like.
And then finally then, what did the documentary teach you about democracy?
Democracy? Oh, God. Well, I don't think there's much democracy in the Labour Party now. You know, it's weird, but, like, I don't know, that's really difficult to answer in terms of... do you mean, like, democracy sort of within the sort of the CLP, or democracy on the whole?
I think democracy on the whole, because I think you've kind of answered the question about the Labour Party, because obviously you had one hope and then you had a fallout that followed the election, so then it became a different Labour Party. But democracy, you said, and you used the word naive yourself, democracy is the thing that you thought was going to see hope through, you know, but it didn't, did it? It was interesting, just as an observation watching it, is how little your observation of what the activists were doing gave any kind of credence or any level of awareness of the noise that was going on in the national media, which from... me thinking of it in parallel times, you know, Corbyn was getting an absolute kicking from about, I'm going to say April as a kind of rough estimate. I'm sure it's before then. And to me, going into that election, I had no hope of winning at all. I don't even know why they called it, but, you know, that's history now. So, yeah, I'm thinking more of the democracy in the broader sense, as in, you think how many, the proportion of people in that district who vote Labour, they're not represented by an 80-seat majority Tory government, are they? So,
yeah, no, and this is why it's almost unfair, you know. And you know, I was naive. I thought we would win that election, and the film would represent that, as I mentioned, but when you look back, you just think there was no chance that was ever going to happen in terms of just the character assassination of Jeremy Corbyn.
Hmm.
And you look at democracy on now, so like the type of stuff that Boris Johnson's getting away with and is still in power, you know, if Jeremy Corbyn done 1% of that, he'd have been sort of hung, drawn and quartered. It's Yeah, I don't know. I don't. It's a strange one, really. Yeah, it's sort of. Yeah, I think I need to give that a lot more thought. About
well, I guess the bigger question is why do we? And this is just you and me shooting the shit here on a podcast, but it strikes me that the Labour Party, whether it be a Corbyn one or a Keir Starmer one, still believe they can win a two-party election, whereas there's such a gross disparity between, you know, how many people voted Labour and how many people voted anything else within, say, Walton, means that they're not proportionally represented in government. Because, and to me, it's like, why aren't all the parties except Tories moving towards wanting something that's proportional as opposed to winner takes all is beyond me.
No, yeah, without a shadow, without... this is the problem with the Labour Party in general. It's sort of, you know, it's shifting back towards the right for me, but it almost takes Liverpool for granted in many ways, in the fact that, you know, we talked about it's anti-Tory. You know, I remember a few years ago, they tried to... Tony Blair's son was thinking about running a Bootle, and that got shut down. Was this absolute sort of, abuse of sort of a vote in many ways. Mm. They're just like, oh, they're up there, they've been through it, they're so anti-Tory that, they'll vote for us. And I think that is sort of a massive, massive problem in terms of the Labour Party and sort of, especially under Keir Starmer.
From a story point of view, and you've already touched on it, obviously the disappointment stroke surprise of the general election loss. But more generally speaking, what stories emerged from your 3-year observation that you were surprised to find that going into it you wouldn't have expected to have found out? Anything new that came for you that, because obviously you're from Liverpool, so there's lots of presumptions and preconceptions, isn't there? So but then when you start making a...
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Film over 3 years, you've got a chance to step back and sort of go, what am I actually seeing here? What's actually happening? So what stories emerged for you that were a surprise?
Nothing stands out. The whole idea was to become so immersed in the filmmaking and becoming one part of the CLP that we just went along with the ride in many ways. There was only two of us who shot it, and the whole idea was to sort of, the camera would be handheld, never on a tripod. You'd almost see sort of pull focuses, change of exposure and whatnot. We sort of wanted an imperfect sort of feel. We wanted to feel like it was in the CLP. We were allowed to film one meeting where they're arguing and stuff. I suppose that was quite surprising, just seeing the arguing in one of the meetings.
Hmm.
But you don't really get that on, like, when they have sort of public talks or whatnot. But like that infighting was quite interesting. We were told to stop film at one point, we had to leave the room because someone was being disciplined. I suppose that was the biggest surprise for me, actually, of all of it. It's just sort of how sort of serious it was behind the scenes. And so, you know what I mean? How well run it was and organized. You think, there's work that goes on to sort of get to that place where everyone's on a march, unified together. You know, it's just like, it's a sort of a tightly run ship. I think that's the biggest thing that came up. But yeah, it's hard because, as I say, we wanted to be part of the CLP in many ways. We wanted to be a sort of subjective camera in it. You know, I'm one of the, I'd done some door knocking when we were shooting in crew.
As
Al was shooting as well. I think if one thing did stand out, it is just how well organized it was. Because a lot these
as a viewer, that's for certain. I mean, it's interesting how little they took for granted, given what you were saying before and what we know about how you know, how much of a dead cert it was Labour was going to win that seat. They basically used that comfort and privilege of being able to win in Liverpool to go to Crewe, to talk in Blackpool. So their commitment to the Labour government was bigger than just simply what they were doing in the constituency, which I thought was really impressive from the film's point of view.
I think they had a little goal of they wanted to improve on their on their vote share. They wanted to get it from like 88% to 89% or something. A little goal. But for them, the big battle was in Blackpool, were in Southport, were in Crewe, you know what I mean? And it was just like the miles that some people put in there. You know, I know people who sort of went to Blackpool, some people went to Barrow, and it was like a 2-hour drive, you know, to get there. Door knocking all day, all back, all in people's spare time. You know, people taking time off work to do this. You know, every spare second committed to sort of, yeah, getting this. And that's what felt like there was something moving. That's where I think the hope comes from, and why we're calling it the hope. Really, there was something there from within. You know, there was people. There was I done a bit of phone banking with them too. There was people of all ages. There was people, you know, in their 80s, and there was people who were 16 who just felt really like galvanized to come together and, you know, believe in doing it. You know, but it was, you know, you look back and it was sort of quite naive. But then I always almost feel embarrassed at that naivety in many ways. It was like, why didn't we, you know, talking before about you know, the state of democracy and, you know, the character assassination of Corbyn. Like, you almost like forgot about that because there was a little bit of hope and you let that slide, where we sort of need to take a step back and look at things in a black and white way, going like, well, how could Corbyn sort of really win this in all reality? But there was hope there. But I feel like I almost shouldn't be embarrassed because it was nice to have that hope. And I don't think I'll probably have that hope personally in party politics, probably in my lifetime again.
Well, I know you said it often was the same 300 people, but on you know, on marches and stuff like that. But as a representation of how people voted, you know, Liverpool didn't fall for the Labour bad, Tory good thing, whereas the Red Wall, as was knocked down in other parts of the North, did. I mean, we saw interviews, didn't we, on the street of like places like Hartlepool, or, you know, saying how, oh, I voted Labour all my life, they've never done anything for us, we need a change. You're like, how do you need a change? It's like they've not been in government, but they bought the idea that this was a change.
Yeah, it's a. I seen the biggest one, but that was some woman at a food bank saying she was voting for the Tories. You know, it's just like, we're done for. You know, we in many ways in that case, it's a. But it is. It's just it's the world we sort of live in, really. People are scared of change. And, you know, when sort of, you know, when you look at sort of the state of sort of the media, in many ways, it's, you can see why they're scared of it.
What do you think your film shows that you feel the British public isn't getting from the mainstream media?
The actual state of the world, effectively. You know, this is a really nice bit at the beginning of the film where they're talking about the CLP are talking about, how can we change people's minds on the doorstep? And they have these political education classes, and this one's about education, actually, and they're talking about, so they're breaking it down, everything down, and in a way that politicians don't do. And that's why I found it quite interesting as a look at politics. They don't speak like politicians, you know what I mean? They speak in very black and white terms, and they're saying, yeah, this is what we do. This and it just makes sense that these people sort of know the state of the world. They sort of know, say, the answers, but they know sort of ways to improve it, and they believe in it, and that's what makes them move forward, what makes them sort of campaign. And I hope people sort of watch it and think, yeah, there is a sort of alternative sort of to what, you know, how things is, because I think right now it's chaos. You look at like the cost of living, you look at everything, you look at the state of democracy in terms of Boris Johnson. It's just, you know, we can't carry on with this at all. A change does have to come. And as you said before, it needs to be slightly more radical than the sort of like Keir Starmer's Labour Party, in my eyes. It can't just be a sort of, you know, a Blairite type change. I hope that people get that right. There is a different sort of, different world to be sort of had. And there's an undercurrent of people who believe in that sort of, that difference and sort of, you know, fought for it and continue to fight for it. You know, at the film ends with a complete sort of reset and a rebirth for the activists, considering, you know, the manifesto didn't work out, the election didn't work out, some people left, but it was again starting at the absolute bottom and changing your sort of your community step by step, you know, politics from the bottom up, which I think is essential, really.
So do you imagine then they become a beacon of light for people to copy, as opposed to trying to feed a machine like this is big and disparate in views as the Labour Party clearly is?
Yes, without a doubt. I think it's inspirational in the sense that all you can do really is affect your own community. And that's all you should really want to do. I know people say, like, someone asked the question, it's just like, and it was implied that, like, you know, what change can these people make on the streets? You know, can they change anything in government? If you like, I remember people used to aim that at Dennis Skinner, you know, because he never took a position on any front bench, and he was always just committed to being an MP for Bolsover. And I think, for me personally, that is what politics should be. And that's maybe the only time ever that politics is pure, when you just care about your community and try and improve your community. And that's how sort of it should spread, really, because, you know, we're never really gonna have socialism in this country. But you can sort of see sort of how you can sort of influence and improve your own community.
No, it speaks to a kind of corporatization that's happened. It's sort of, I guess, in my adult life, to British politics, in the sense of, it, you know, when I was 18, it did used to be somebody would stand and they would be standing for Bury South, where I grew up. You know, that was what they were. They weren't helicoptered in from somewhere because they needed somebody to win a seat. And I'm sure that was happening. And I'm sure, you know, there's always been safe seats and there's always been, but again, the safe seat element points to that problem we talked to earlier, which is without proportional representation, your votes just fly in the wind then, because they just win an MP a seat. They don't actually help represent if more MPs of one other party do. I mean, as mad as it sounds, I remember when I think it was, did UKIP get like 4 million votes but only one seat? You know,
really?
Yeah. And I'm going to say 2015. It must have been, because obviously led up to the Brexit referendum. So it was something mad like that. And even though I obviously wouldn't want to have a UKIP world, those 4 million people need to be represented. And obviously getting one member of parliament out of 4 million voters doesn't seem like a very good democracy.
Well, no, at all. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, but politics is, as it's like a, it's almost like a corporation, isn't it? It's a machine, and the machines are very similar across the parties, really. And I suppose the film is about politics, and it's a political film, and it's about party politics. But it doesn't feel like a political film in the sense that, you know, we could have went down to Parliament, maybe filmed one or two of the MPs, but it was always on the street. I think hopefully that's one of the strengths of the film.
No, I think it is. I think because you'd, I mean, who am I? I didn't make the film, but I think you would have muddied the message of all the work that was doing. Because like what you were describing earlier, for me watching it, I was like, you know, I remember the backdrop to the 2019 election was get it done. That was the Tory policy, get it done. It was just a Brexit thing. You didn't hear Brexit get mentioned barely once in your documentary, because people were interested in what public services to people on the ground who were trying to get votes, were trying to argue the case for better public services, a growth in public services, renationalisation of things that have clearly failed, you know. But that's very nuanced, and it's very, you know, it's not as simple as get it done, which, you know, for some reason that I can't explain, got an 80-seat majority.
That's the thing with the sort of the Brexit thing, you know, get Brexit done and whatnot. But yeah, as you said, these are the people. These are almost like, you know, when Corbyn, I remember that debate with Corbyn and Johnson, and Johnson literally answered every question with like, let's get it done. And Corbyn was trying to sort of talk about, you know, the NHS or transport, and it just weren't cutting through at all, you know. And I think this is the thing with the people in the film. That's what they believe in. There's an argument in the film where they're talking about someone wants, you know, what they voted for, Brexit, and they're like, we just want to move on, you know what I mean, and move forward, you know, because that's the thing with politics, you know, it's not static, it's always moving forward, and it's forever changing, really. Mm. Even though, you know, the whole Brexit thing did make it quite stagnant in many ways and sort of, well, it muddied that election.
Without a doubt. Well, what we should tell people is when and how they can see the movie.
Yeah, it's released on the 16th of June. Obviously, the premiere's in Liverpool, quite naturally. we're doing a little tour with it. It's going up to Glasgow, Newcastle, Leeds, Nottingham. We hope to announce a few more. It's in Brighton. We'll have one or two in London. It will be out and about there, definitely. It's you know, I feel like it's a hard sell, this film, in many ways, because of what it represents. It is the hope and the hope trilogy. We had hope, but that hope is now gone. So why would you want to revisit that in a documentary? Mm. You know, and I do think like, yeah, it will be interesting to see who comes out with it, because comes out to see it, because, you know, a lot of people sort of got involved in that movement. But I don't think they want to be reminded of it in many ways. But I'm hoping that people sort of see that, like, you know, I'm just glad that there's a document that exists that sort of shows the work that people put into that election.
I was going to say, that's the thing. Yeah. I mean, for anyone that's sort of half in, half out about whether they should be doing it locally themselves, might feel inspired by your film, because I think you an election is lost, but Walton District doesn't disappear.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you can't stop, can you? You've got to keep moving. It's and that's the thing. It's I do sort of you know, this is the type of, like, I always, when I was making, I was like, this is actually a film I would like to have seen someone shoot from the '70s or the '80s. Mm. Someone could have shown me this from, you know, of Eric Heffer or Tony Benn doing it in his constituents, and, you know, it's a sort of a micro budget sort of protest film, really. In many ways, it's punching above its weight in terms of release, but, you know, it is a chronicle of something that did happen. Which, and I thought maybe there's other people making similar films, because it was such a momentous time in political history, and nothing seems to be coming out from it at all. You know, one of the templates for the film was there was a documentary on the BBC about the 2017 election. It was called Labour, the Summer That.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Changed everything, and they follow three MPs. One of them's Stephen Kinnock. I can't remember the other two. And you could see that whole film was about shadowing these, like, sort of these snidey little MPs who wanted the death of Corbyn, and then they would sort of take over the party, and the film and the MPs, and then the faces drop at 2017 because it was really close. Mm. You could see that film was set up though to sort of show, how Corbyn will fail, and then, you know, the sort of centre-right or right-wingers in the party sort of take control again. So we use as a template, like, we'll make that film, but a real film about, you know, about what the Labour Party is currently. And I hope, be interested to see how the film ages in many ways.
Well, look, congratulations. I think you're right. It is great to have a document of that time. And like you said, an overtime, in a way, maybe when the wounds have healed for some people, it'll become more valuable over time as much as anything else, because it's a real, you know, like I say, you show a real shift in Britain without needing to keep mentioning the word Brexit. You in a way, your film is showing the collateral damage of that simplistic view of politics, is that in reality, the way you build hope is about is about giving people something, not just taking something away.
It's actually really about Corbyn. You know, we could have filmed stuff with Corbyn, but you know, he's mentioned a handful of times, and at the end of the film, it's summed up perfectly. But at the end of one of the episodes, it was never about Corbyn. It was about the ideas. You know what I mean? And those ideas are still, you know, still flicking away. Really.
I mean, that was something I made that stood out to me, because I think, unfortunately, because of the vilification of Corbyn, the election didn't become about his policies. I mean, you know, as crazy as it is, his policies were not that radical to Ed Miliband's manifesto, to be honest with you.
Exactly. Yeah, I thought that manifesto could have been way more sort of more radical, if you like.
And given what the Tories have done, which would be socialist things during the pandemic, you know, the state intervening at every level.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't as wild as it was portrayed, but there was other parts of the debate that just kind of made it about who Corbyn was and what Corbyn represented in a media perception and a media narrative than it was about the policies he represented for Great Britain.
It's so strange that, though, isn't it? You know, and maybe that comes back to democracy you're talking about, like that. Literally, that's what we judged the leader of a political party by, literally, like, you know, how he dressed, you know, what he was sort of portrayed as, rather than as ideas. You know, imagine voting for someone, not because you didn't like their ideas, just because you didn't like him, but didn't really know why you didn't like him.
Mm.
You know, it's so odd. Well,
did you see, there was an Australian politician did this recently where a right-wing journalist tried to hoodwink him with a kind of gotcha question. And he did, the whole response was, this isn't about me. We're trying to develop ideas. We're trying to give people things to think about and why they vote. Nobody's voting for me. They're voting for the ideas of why we want to be in power. Not because I want to be in power. And it was just a brilliant, brilliant answer. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but it was just really well done. And you kind of go, I wish more politicians with a radical outlook on life would give that kind of response.
Yeah, it would. I can't see it changing, though, really. I can almost see it getting worse in many ways.
The other thing is that in a way, Britain is a conservative with a small C country. Liverpool might not be a city. Yeah. You know, and certainly the people that you show in Walton certainly aren't, but the country, and that's where you get that. And conservative is stasis. You know, it goes back to that point you made about fear of change.
I think we live in a sort of one party state almost, if you like. You know, so the last Labour sort of victory that went to do with Blair was 1974.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? And since then, it's been Conservatives, other than the three Blair wins. But Blair only won because he sort of shook hands with the devil, with Murdoch, and took the party to the right. So that's, you know, as you were saying, it's sort of, there's not much difference between sort of Tony Blair's Labour Party and the Conservative Party in my eyes. There's not, you know, at all.
Well, look, let's end on an up note. That was your Hope trilogy. To borrow a Star Wars term, what's your new Hope going to be?
So I've started shooting a new film about, and it's not political, and I can't wait to get my teeth stuck into it because, it's been a slog the last few years, you know, making these films. And I'm glad I've done them, but I'm moving on to something completely sort of different, a creative approach and subject. Yeah, it's about an author, I won't say who, but yeah, he is interesting, and I think we can create a nice little piece of work from it.
Well, good luck with that, and congratulations on Manifesto. And it just gives me to say thank you very much for giving your time on the Britflix podcast.
Oh, thanks so much, Stuart.
Clean.
goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.